This is Audible.
English Fluency for Advanced English Speaker. How to Unlock the Full Potential to Speak English Fluently. Written by Whitney Nelson. Narrated by Carissa Clark Howe. Introduction. Congratulations. You're already an advanced student of the English language. Before you take another step in your journey of learning, though, you need to pause a moment and celebrate your success thus far. English is no easy language to learn. It's filled with idioms that make no literal sense and colloquialisms that you may only hear once in a blue moon, like the phrase I just used. If that weren't enough, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of exceptions to the established rules of grammar, especially when it comes to turning single nouns into plural nouns. The plural of alumnus is alumni, but the plural of campus is campuses. And there's really no rule you can memorize to know that, except to memorize them initially. After you speak it for a while, then you get to know almost intuitively. But you already know the challenges that face you. I'm sure you've already been swamped with many of these puzzling contradictions already. Despite all those obstacles, though, you've progressed this far, successfully encountering every twist and turn the language has thrown at you. But you've encountered a problem you just can't seem to solve. You've reached a plateau in your fluency. Sure, you can read the language and understand it fairly well when it's spoken quickly by native speakers. Nothing you do, however, seems to help you make any more progress. In a phrase, you're stuck. Stop it right there. You hear other students speak the language well. Your first thought is, why can't I do that? Ah, but you can. That's why I've written this book. It's created just for you. The advanced English student who desires to take his or her ability to speak the language to the next level. Don't believe me? What if I told you that armed with 7 well-kept secrets, you can nearly effortlessly soar to the next level of fluency in your study of English? All the struggling you've done, all the doubts you've had, will fade away once your ability to speak the language you're so excited about using improves. How can I be so sure that these steps will work? Because not only have I used them, but thousands of others have used these same techniques to improve their skills and crack through that glass ceiling. I started sharing these secrets with interested friends, family, and students. Today, they're speaking English like it was their native tongue. And you, too, can be among those successful students who discover the joy of conquering a language they once thought impossible to learn. This book is not for beginners. This book provides you with the key secrets you'll need to unlock the next level of fluency and open an entire new world of fluency. With this book by your side, you'll discover that taking your skills to the next level wasn't nearly as difficult as you originally imagined it to be. In this book, you'll discover not only the secrets, but you'll also find the encouragement to continue in your studies. As you read these pages, you'll feel as if you have your own personal English tutor sitting right next to you, guiding you every step of the way. Having been in the same position myself at one time, and helping hundreds of others in this identical situation, I have a good idea of what's running through your mind as we go through these steps. The content of the book is arranged so that the first chapters have a general wide appeal, and will help just about everyone become better at the spoken word. As you read further in the book, each section talks about the language in a bit more success. This doesn't mean that you can't understand Chapter 2 without reading Chapter 1. Feel free to read these chapters in any order, based on your perceived personal needs. In the first chapter, we'll review the 5 myths about English that are the common obstacles of most students. You'll undoubtedly recognize at least one of them as an impediment to your learning. Once you know the myth or myths holding you back, it'll just be a matter of time to change your thinking and continue studying. The following chapter introduces you to an effective method of creating attainable goals for yourself. Called SMART goals, you'll learn how even a minimum of planning can bring a maximum of learning. You'll want to not waste a single minute implementing them in your learning schedule. Guaranteed. Not only will this goal-setting technique help you in pursuit of learning to speak the English language, but you can transfer these goal-setting skills to any dream you'd like to manifest. The third secret to fluency is to immerse yourself in the language. Easier said than done, you say? Most students mistakenly believe that the only way to do that is to travel to meet native speakers. That's why the chapter is filled with tips that'll have yourself swimming in English before you realize it. None of these guidelines require travel or even walking up to total strangers and starting conversations. In fact, they all involve low-risk situations that will have you speaking English in safe, low-risk situations more often than you ever thought possible. When you begin reading Chapter 4's Secret to Success, you may shake your head in disbelief, but by the time you've finished it, you'll be eager and excited to implement suggestions. That's because this involves the one step most of us fear most when we're learning anything, not just the English language. The secret key? It's perfectly fine to make mistakes. In fact, it's not only perfectly fine, but it's nearly mandatory. It's guaranteed to change your entire way of viewing the learning process. What does listening have to do with speaking a language? Everything. In the fifth step, you'll not only discover how improving this one habit can improve your fluency by leaps and bounds. The chapter also provides you with techniques to develop your active listening skills and then translate those into the breakthrough in your speaking of English. But that's not all. We take listening to new heights with a technique called extensive listening. Discover how it can be the key to your breakthrough in propelling you into the new English-speaking opportunities. When we move on to the next chapter, in which you'll learn about one of the most effective methods of learning any language. Known in academic circles as shadowing, this method is also called parroting by those who use it often. Essentially, you'll be improving your fluency the way you learned your native language. In this technique, you'll be repeating the sounds of those speaking English word for word, almost at the same time the person is speaking. You'll learn how you can use this technique in a variety of situations. With today's technology, shadowing is easier than ever before. Your journey to fluency. While this volume is meant to be a student's guidebook through the English language, it's really so much more. You'll find yourself referring to this book again and again in your journey of learning. Are you prepared to climb to new levels of fluency nearly effortlessly? It's time to discover what's been keeping you on this plateau of learning. It's time to remove the obstacles in your path and seriously continue on this amazing path of learning you've set your sights on. Let's get started. Chapter 1. Getting over the plateau to become a fluent English speaker. Are you frustrated? Do you believe you've hit the peak of your learning with regard to the English language? You can read the language, you know the grammar, and you can understand it when you hear the spoken word. Yet you're not speaking it as fluently as you want to, as you need to. No, there's nothing wrong with you. Many persons learning English feel as you do. They've reached a certain point in their ability to speak the language and just can't seem to advance any further. Unfortunately, they believe that what they've learned is all they can learn. They've tried and tried to reach that next level fluency, but to no avail. Does this sound like your story? Are you ready to throw up your hands and give up? Thinking any more progress is hopeless? Don't quit. But before you continue any farther, stop knocking your head against the wall. Obviously, what you're doing right now is not working. It's time to step back and analyze what needs changed in your approach to learning. Instead of going any further in your pursuit of learning the spoken English language, you need to look into your own thinking to discover if you're holding any limiting beliefs holding you back. These are really myths that many people hold as the truth about their ability to learn to speak English fluently that, quite frankly, just aren't true. Here are five of the most common limiting beliefs that students of English believe are natural barriers to their learning. These beliefs, which many attribute to holding them back from being more fluent speaker, are really nothing more but preconceived notions. They can be overcome simply by changing your thinking. Then, you can break that barrier to attain the next level of fluency. It may sound a bit strange, but it really does work. Five myths that may be hindering your English fluency. 1. Your age. This is just an excuse. At one time, scientists believed that as persons aged, the harder it was for them to learn. And not just the English language, everything. Math, science, even the adopting of new hobbies like knitting or playing the piano. if you think about it. That's a pretty dismal diagnosis. That's standard scientific thought stated that your brain cells continued to reproduce and were receptive to learning only up to a certain age. Once you reached that age, your body would no longer make any new cells. If you could learn anything new, it would be much more difficult, taking a longer period of time. Whatever it was you wanted to learn, the scientists warned you it would be an uphill battle. The lesson people took from this dictum? If you didn't learn a language when you were younger, well, you were out of luck. You weren't about to learn it as an older individual. If you did manage it, you'd be struggling every step of the way. Today, scientists have discovered that proclamation, taken as a law for so long, is not in the least bit true. You need to know right now that your age doesn't limit your ability to speak English fluently. It's more likely you believing your age is a limiting factor actually keeps you from learning. Once you overcome this mindset, you'll discover that English isn't as difficult to speak as you thought. And before you know it, you've unlocked the secret that has prevented you from going any farther. It's time to stop blaming your age for that plateau you've reached, to learn and to start using the English language more. With the suggestions presented throughout the rest of this book, you'll discover that it's easier than you once believed. 2. Fear of making mistakes. Many individuals refuse to speak English as often as they could. Why? Simply because they're afraid of making mistakes. But worse than that, they believe that someone will hear them make these mistakes and laugh at them. The thought of making a mistake when speaking English shouldn't inhibit you or limit your speaking it in any way. In fact, it really should do the exact opposite. It should spur you on to speak it all the more. Deep down, you already know what I'm about to tell you. Mistakes are our friends. Making a mistake when you talk is the ultimate way to learn the English language, or any language for that matter. Every single person learning a language made some type of mistake when they started. In fact, if the truth be known, they made what they considered more than their fair share of blunders. Even native speakers don't speak perfect English. Listen closely to some native speakers, and you'll see exactly what I mean. What if I told you that instead of fearing these mistakes, you should be embracing them? Would you think I was totally insane? Well, that's exactly what you should be doing, speaking more and making more mistakes. That's because the more mistakes you make, the faster you'll learn. Let me tell you a story about two individuals, both learning English. Both, in fact, were at about the same level of fluency. They could read and comprehend English well, and in general had a good grasp of speaking it. Both wanted to go beyond where they were currently and hit the next level of fluency. But one student feared speaking it, not only in her daily life, but also in the classroom. She would never volunteer in class, and when called upon, she would barely speak up. When she did answer, she used as few words as possible. The instructor continually asked her to expand on her answers. The other student, coincidentally, was in the same classroom and took every opportunity to speak English. He was the student always first to volunteer to answer in English. Instead of just answering with a short phrase or a one-word answer, he would make sure he'd elaborate a bit, sometimes more than he needed to. The point is that he took every opportunity in class to speak English. Not only that, but he would make sure he used the language as much as possible outside of the classroom as well. He made a concerted effort to associate with people who spoke English and made it a point to speak up in conversations even. If someone corrected his English, he thanked them. He would go on to explain that he was still learning and appreciated the corrections. You could tell in an instant that the first student shied from talking because she feared making mistakes. She believed that every word that came out of her mouth had to be perfect. The second student, though, approached his learning not only as a positive activity, but something that was actually fun. Making mistakes didn't bother him. You can guess who learned to speak English more quickly and more fluently. Don't let fear of making mistakes, either in class or in public, hold you back from speaking the language. We've all made mistakes, whether we're learning a language or math or any other subject. Mistakes are the foundation of any type of learning. 3. You can't remember all the rules of grammar. Wow, definitely don't let this hold you back. No one, not even native speakers, can remember all the grammar rules. In fact, few speakers even try to follow all the rules. This includes native English speakers. If you took the time to review all the grammar that went into speaking a sentence before you spoke it, you'd never utter another English sentence. Instead, place your faith in your vocabulary and especially listening to others. And if you make it a point to speak English, stop holding yourself to some impossible standard. You'll never, ever enjoy the language. Believe it or not, learning a new language is fun, really fun. Perfect grammar is the last thing you need to worry about. Instead, spend your time expanding your vocabulary, learning new words, and using them as much as possible in conversations. Speak English every chance you get, whether you're clear about the grammar involved in the sentences you used or not. This book is all about speaking the English language fluently. It's not about learning grammar. It's about using the language. Let's say that you're in a group of people, and I want to say that you ate an apple yesterday. If your grammar is shaky, you might say, "I yesterday apple eat." Don't worry about making a fool of yourself. A native speaker may correct you and tell you the sentence is structured like this: "I ate an apple yesterday." Poof! You've learned to speak the language a little better through speaking up. And now you actually have a pattern for speaking a sentence like that. You've learned first how to pattern a sentence in the past tense. You've also learned that the past tense of eat is ate. In that small, insignificant mistake, you've broken through to the next level. And the best part is that you didn't have to struggle over any grammar rules. All in all, you probably now feel better about yourself, not only for speaking up, but for actually learning how to use English grammar at the same time. Imagine how quickly you can improve your grammar without even thinking about it, just by speaking a few sentences. Imagine what would happen if you spoke even more. Instead of holding yourself up in your house and studying the dizzying array of grammar rules before you speak, get together with English speakers, native speakers, and students like yourself, and use the vocabulary you've already learned. 4. You need to travel to be able to speak English fluently. Another fallacy. You don't need to travel anywhere in order to improve your speech. There are many people who have learned the English language without going very far from home. If you're already living in the United States, that's not so much an issue anyway. But if you're currently living outside an English-speaking country and learning the language with an eye to visiting such a country in the near future, you may view learning English as a hopeless pursuit. You may also be reassessing why you're even bothering to learn the language. Don't start second-guessing yourself. You can learn the language from wherever you are at the moment, even if you don't have access to what you think you need. Have access to a computer? Then you already know how many video clips are on the web in English. Listen to these. Repeat what these speakers say and the way they say it. Imagine these speakers are in the same room with you. If you have to, stop the video and repeat what they've said, then double-check yourself. There are plenty of ways of learning English. As long as you're learning, there is no wrong way. The key here is to focus on learning it using a method that's available to you. Instead of mourning that you can't travel or you don't know anyone who is speaking the language, dig around on the internet and find an English-speaking site. You may even discover a site that teaches you English. There are certainly plenty out there. 5. There are no other people around me speaking English. This is a corollary to the "I can't travel to an English-speaking country" myth. While it certainly would be easier if you knew individuals who could speak English, it's definitely not essential, regardless of what you've heard to the contrary. With a computer keyboard at your fingertips and the internet, it doesn't matter whether you live with or next door to English speakers or not. With less effort than you'd ever imagine on your part, you can find someone who speaks English. Not only that, I'm betting that you'll also discover students of English, just like yourself, who are looking for others who speak at their level of fluency. Imagine how much you could all help each other. Imagine how much you can learn with only a bit of effort on your part. These are the five most common complaints that people use to block their excelling at speaking the English language like a native. How many of these apply to you? What are your personal myths? Do you have any other personally limiting beliefs that hold you back from learning to speak the English language? If you do, why not stop right now and write them down? Now study them really well. Are those really valid reasons for not learning the English language? Can you think of any way you can overcome them? Regardless of what your personal thoughts are about your inability to get to the next level of English fluency, remember that the only thing that is holding you back are your beliefs. The moment you believe you can learn to speak the English language like a native, you will. It's time to think more positively about your ability to improve your ability to speak the English language. Just changing your thinking from, "Wow, this is really difficult," to, "Hey, this is getting easier all the time," will help you speak more fluently. Guaranteed. Chapter 2, Setting Smart Goals, The Secret of Getting What You Want When You Want It. Pedro complained to his English instructor one day that he was disappointed that his fluency in the language seemed to have hit a peak. "I can't advance any farther," he said, "and I'm far from sounding like a native speaker. And that in the long run is my goal. Did I set my sights too high?" The instructor told him that, indeed, he did not set any goal that he could not accomplish. He just may have to rethink how to reach them. That's when he told Pedro about SMART goals. Are you feeling stuck in your level of learning? Are you, like Pedro, beginning to think you'll never break through to that next level of learning in which you sound more fluent, more like a native speaker? Then perhaps it's time you look into using SMART goals as well. What are they? What makes SMART goals different from any other? Simple. When you create this type of goal, you're strategically placing yourself in a position of achieving them. If you follow the guidelines of these techniques, in fact, it would be extremely difficult to fail. SMART. I can hear you now. When do we start? Well, there's no time like the present. SMART is an acronym for specific, measurable, attainable, responsible, and time-bound. If you make your goals in accordance with these five guidelines, you're well on your way to fulfilling your English language dreams. But more than that, this is a technique used by a growing number of business executives, as well as entrepreneurs, to move their projects forward. It's time-tested. And the best part is that you can take these guidelines and use them for any goals you have for your life. The letter S in SMART stands for specific. You've probably created many goals in your life. Think back to several of them. Think about the times you succeeded as well as those instances in which you didn't reach them. What made the difference? What did you do right when you achieved your goals? How did this differ from the times you didn't reach your dreams? Perhaps it could be that the ones you achieved were worded more specifically. Did you know exactly what you wanted? This works regardless of what your goals are. They aren't necessarily related to your learning the English language. Take, for example, the individual who wanted to lose weight. She started out by saying that someday she'd like to lose weight, but until she decided specifically how many pounds she wanted to lose, her weight held steady. Once she made the decision and gave herself a deadline, however, she couldn't understand why she couldn't stick to an eating plan. So your first step is deciding specifically what it is you want to do. Once you know exactly what it is, then create specific steps you believe will get you there. Let's say your goal is to be able to speak English well enough to make a presentation in front of your supervisors and several department managers at work. Now write down what you believe you need to do in order to speak English well enough to do it. These are your steps for reaching your goals. For example, if giving a presentation is the goal, you must look critically at your spoken language skills now. Decide what type of improvements you need to make. You may decide you want to work on your pronunciation. Learn more vocabulary words, as well as perfect their pronunciation. Learn how to tell a joke in English. What else do you believe is keeping you from reaching this level of fluency in the English language? Not sure? Ask your instructor or a trusted friend. Make sure you keep a list of these, because you're going to need them for the next step.
Keeping in mind your goal of making this presentation, we'll go on to the next step in SMART goals. The M in SMART stands for measurable. That may be a no-brainer when it's said that way, but you'd be surprised how many people create goals without thinking about how they're going to measure their progress. And if you can't measure whether you're a quarter of the way to your goal or half to making your dream come true, how will you ever know when you've reached that particular goal? That's why you need to discover a way to measure your progress. Let's continue with the example we used in the previous paragraphs. You want to perfect your ability to speak English so you can give a presentation at work. The first thing we listed that needed to be improved was your ability to pronounce English. Let's say this is your goal as well. Just saying it doesn't get it done. You could spend years perfecting it, but never recognize when your speech is, indeed, good enough. Your first decision, and creating a measurable goal, is to either recognize your improvement yourself, or get someone's opinion on your pronunciation. Ideally, this would be your instructor or a trusted friend. You see how, by adding the idea of measuring your improvement, you've created a goal you can work toward and feel good about attaining once you've reached it. Your second step in speaking English well enough to make a presentation was expand your vocabulary. Here again, you need to set a certain number of words you want to learn and pronounce. If you don't settle on how many words, you could be learning words forever. So not only settle on how many, but perhaps pick out a few from an English book, or ask your English teacher for recommendations on a few words. You may even want to ask a few colleagues what types of words they would recommend that may be business-related. Within this, you'll then want to start tackling this list. In addition to having friends and tutors to help with your pronunciation, remember the web, especially any dictionary applications or sites that you have access to. The definition of each entry provides you with a proper pronunciation of the word. And finally, one of your goals was to be able to tell a joke. How are you going to turn this into a measurable goal? You may want to practice it in front of the mirror or with a good friend who will be honest with you. Once you've earned the thumbs up of a friend, you may want to take your joke to several more people to get their opinions. The key to success in creating any successfully measurable goal is to look at the details of what needs to be done and honestly evaluate your ability to do it. Making the decision on how to measure your progress is a big step in ensuring this will work. While you should never give up your dream, you also need to be open to the process of making it measurable, as well as creating the best possible strategy to make this happen. You also need to continually reassess how vital these goals are to you. Now that you have one or more goals that are specific and measurable, your next step is to ensure that your goals are attainable. Yes, the A in SMART goals stands for attainable. This is an important aspect of creating any goal, not just those related to your speaking English. This step may take some time. First, you need to be absolutely honest with yourself. What do you truly believe you can attain? Don't overstretch your reach and set some impossible goal that is beyond your level. That will only disappoint you, and you may wrongly believe learning English is simply beyond your capability. It's better to set a goal and break it into two steps and reach it than set one that's simply impossible to reach. Let's face it, I'm 5'2" tall. If my goal were to play professional basketball, that may be seen as an unattainable goal. But to set a goal that I make so certain percentage of the shots I take on the court is attainable for me. That goal involves more my skill more than my natural height. Pedro, for example, originally set a goal of learning how to pronounce 15 new words a week. Before he committed himself to that goal, though, he thought long and hard if it really were attainable. Having second thoughts, he instead set his sights on learning 10, at least for the first week. After that, he would adjust his goal depending on how he performed the first week. When you're working with the idea of whether your goals are attainable, you may have to be flexible. If you discover that you set your sights a bit too high, reduce them. There's no shame in doing that. In fact, having a desire that is at least realistic will help build your self-confidence. On the other hand, you don't want to make your target so easy that it doesn't challenge you. If your goal is too easy, you won't push yourself to do your best, and you may even lose interest. Pedro may also want to create an attainable goal that he can meet with a teacher or close friend weekly to help him with his speaking. Once a week, for example, sounds reasonable. If he set his sights on meeting with someone 5 times a week, that may be a bit excessive and end up being something he couldn't achieve, which would possibly make him feel as if he failed. In reality, he didn't really fail. He simply underestimated the time involved in meetings like that. Pedro gave much thought to how to perfect telling a joke and the attainability of that goal as well. He admired several comedians on television. The question he had to ask himself was, should he hold himself up to a professional level of delivery when he wasn't even a native speaker? The fact of the matter was that he admired the presentations of several of his colleagues who had told some great jokes. The attainable goal, then, would be to practice until he felt he could present more like them. He thought that would be an attainable goal. He could learn to pitch these jokes through various ways, including professionals on television, as well as the colleagues you work with. Pedro also recorded himself telling the joke to review his pronunciation. Not only does Pedro have to learn to be flexible, he has to discover what smaller, equally attainable goals he breaks this dream into smaller chunks. The letter R in SMART goals stands for the word responsible. The question becomes, who is responsible for achieving this goal? The obvious answer is Pedro. As you create your goals, it will become quite apparent that you are ultimately responsible. What Pedro learned as he went along, however, was he needed to hold those who offered services of their help responsible as well. He would have difficulty attaining some of the goals without the help of his friends, colleagues, and instructors. This by no means absolves him of all responsibility for achieving them, but it does mean he may have to ensure in some form that those who offered to help him actually do. If that should occur, he may have to take the initiative in reminding his instructor or others that they had volunteered to help. He may have to suggest times they could meet. Pedro can't, and neither can you, just ask for help and then expect them to always take the initiative to help you. Other issues that may fall under the responsible portion of the SMART goals include the amount of time you can realistically invest in each goal. Hold yourself responsible for ensuring you've created goals that overextend you or your resources. If you set unrealistic goals, you'll be disappointed and tempted to give up. You'll also have to approach your goals responsibly. A large part of that is knowing when to ask for help. It could be that you need someone to spend time with you and assess your pronunciation. It could also be something as simple as an individual who you report to occasionally who holds you accountable for your progress. The T of the acronym of SMART represents the phrase time-bound. Have you ever heard the saying that goals without a deadline are dreams? While it's admirable to have dreams, the word itself implies that it's something that you'll see fulfilled in the future. Or worse yet, something that's totally unachievable. You're not dealing with pie-in-the-sky dreams that you don't expect to come true. Not by a long shot. You're creating specific targets that you expect to reach. When can you expect to see these goals manifest? That's up to you. One thing is 100% certain, though. If you don't hold yourself to a deadline, they'll never materialize. Pedro discovered this. He found that if he didn't put a specific time to reach his goal, he was far less likely to actually achieve them. Pedro, for example, knew that it would take some time before he would be able to master the English language well enough to present a project report to his colleagues at work, so he set his sights on achieving them in 1 year. But he also knew that he had to do the same thing with the intermediate goals that would eventually get him to his dream. So he sat down with pencil and a calendar in order to start assigning a timeline to his smaller goals. In order to do this correctly, he needed to analyze the smaller goals and set an attainable timeline for all of his goals. The moment he realized that he would be running behind on one of the smaller aims, he would then need to reevaluate all the goals which followed. It could mean that he would encounter a chain reaction. All the steps after that would also be met later than he had intended. If he encountered this, he could handle this in 2 ways. First, he could just delay the attainment of these steps and assign himself a later manifestation day. Or, he could adjust his goals, even if it means working a bit harder and longer, in order to reach his ultimate goal on time. The point of setting specific completion dates is that it helps you to plan. Pedro set a final target date as 1 year. A year from the day he started, he hoped to be standing in front of his colleagues, informing them about the progress of a project. If he saw he was falling behind on this timetable, he could then adjust his intermediate steps to recover some of the lost time. Being held time-bound for a goal is also a great motivating factor to aid in your planning. Once Pedro set a final goal, he worked backwards in planning deadlines for all the smaller steps. He started with his final goal date and carefully charted where he had to be a month before his final goal and then 2 months before that date. He actually spent quite a bit of time figuring out how much time he'd need for all the smaller steps in order to get where he wanted to be on time. Pedro decided that in a week, he should work on one lesson on vocabulary, learning the meaning of the words. Additionally, he needed to put in 2 practice sessions on pronunciation. One of those would be constructed on his own with the help of a recorder and the internet, and one would be, when possible, with his instructor or a good friend. The final decision Pedro made in fulfilling the time-bound portion of his SMART goals was to take a few moments periodically in order to assess his progress. He set his assessment dates as once a month. He compared where he was to where he hoped to be. Was he on track? Would he be able to make his goal within the time frame he set? Or was he running behind? Did he need to increase the number of vocabulary words he was learning every week, or did he need more work on his pronunciation? Whatever he eventually decided, he fine-tuned his schedule to accommodate his ultimate completion date. SMART goals are an excellent method of ensuring you don't lose sight of your desires. How many times have you set New Year's resolutions only to find by February you realize you're not working toward them? That's because you didn't apply the follow-up work necessary to keep you laser-focused on your goal. You merely wrote down some vague goal and went on with your life. Your New Year's resolutions become nothing more than afterthoughts as you continued on with your life. You can easily see how setting and maintaining SMART goals are essential in manifesting your desire to speak English fluently. The key to working these goals is to keep them uppermost in your mind. Pedro learned, and so you'll discover this as well, that learning English is a daily discipline. You can't learn to speak fluently by cramming a week's worth of work into a day or two. The need for flexibility. The other lesson Pedro learned from instituting this technique is that he needed to maintain a degree of flexibility. If a step isn't working, then he needed to revise it. If he hadn't progressed as far as he had hoped by the end of a month or so, he needed to reassess his strategy. He needed to analyze what was working and what wasn't, and he needed to do it on a regular basis. But there is one more action Pedro took when he successfully completed each of his smaller goals. He rewarded himself. At the very least, he stopped for a few moments and told himself how good he was doing. Sometimes, he would treat himself to a dinner out or buy himself a small present. You should consider doing something similar. It needn't be a large purchase or even a huge dinner. The important thing is that you stop for several moments and compliment yourself on doing a good job, then cheer yourself on to going all the way. Once you've set your goals, it's time to move on to learning methods on achieving these goals. In the next chapter, you'll learn that the fastest way to learn English is to just dive into the language. You'll also learn some techniques on doing just that.
Chapter 3. Immerse yourself in the English language. Have you ever wondered what the difference is between an individual who seems to glide through learning the English language and someone who struggles with every word, perhaps even every syllable? You may have assumed that it's all a matter of skill. You dismiss their success as a natural talent they possess for learning the spoken word. You may even credit them with being smarter than the average person. Well, you may think all of that, but you'd be wrong. Those who learn how to speak English fluently are neither smarter than you, nor do they necessarily have a gift for learning languages. What separates those who learn the spoken word of English from those who don't can be described in one word: immersion. What? Those who seem to learn effortlessly simply immerse themselves into the language. They seek out opportunities to speak English at every turn. If they have to make a choice between speaking their native language or speaking English, they choose English every chance they get. Consider this for a moment. You'll never improve at any activity, jogging, playing piano, or even knitting, unless you practice. Practicing the English language is the only way to immerse yourself in the language. The only way to learn English. Believe it or not, you can be the person who others envy at your quick grasp of the English language.
you can be the individual who speaks it with ease. And you can start right now, as long as you keep these guidelines in mind. 1. Don't spend a lot of time perfecting your grammar. Believe it or not, this is probably the most important rule in learning how to speak English. Your goal isn't to write a paragraph in English with no grammatical mistakes. Your goal is to speak it. So don't obsess with grammar. If you listen closely to native speakers, not everyone speaks English perfectly all the time. Let's face it. At this point in your studies, you already have a firm grasp of English grammar. You probably could even correct a native speaker when they don't use proper grammar. So if your goal is to become a better speaker, you need to focus on using it as if it were your first language. Actually, studying grammar will only hinder your development using the spoken word. If you analyze what you're about to say and think about all the grammar rules before you speak, you'll discover the precise moment to say what you wanted to. When you're thinking about this guideline, you need to know that even most native speakers of the English language only know about 20% of all the hundreds and hundreds of the rules. A mere 20%. At this point in your studies, you probably already know more than that. Don't worry. The more frequently you speak English, you'll undoubtedly get an ear for proper grammar. After a while, the sound of an improperly structured sentence or verbs that don't agree with your subject will sound horrible. As long as you know it sounds right, you'll be able to speak it well enough. I'm guessing that, as an advanced student, you already have a grasp of this aspect of your learning. 2. Learn phrases, not words. Think about it. You probably know many vocabulary words, and you undoubtedly know how to pronounce them. But what you really need to study at this point are phrases. While knowing the words are indeed important, languages are really a compilation of phrases. I'm sure you know students of the language who have an impeccable grasp of vocabulary words, but still can't create a sentence if their life depended on it. Why? They failed to study English phrases. When children learn how to talk, they're definitely immersed in their native language. It's usually the only language they hear from the moment they wake up until they're tucked into bed at night. What they hear are not separate words, but sentences, phrases, and everything in between. If you already know about 1,000 words, and you probably know more than that right now, you could still find yourself stumbling over stringing more than 2 sentences together to engage yourself intelligently in conversation. But all you really need to know is approximately 100 phrases, and you'll be able to string sentence after sentence with ease. In contrast, you'll be surprised how much more fluent you'll be. If you know 1,000 separate words, you may be able to correctly create 1 sentence. Only 1 sentence. If you learn 100 phrases, you'll be able to speak many more sentences. And if you get ambitious and learn 1,000 phrases, it's not nearly as difficult as it sounds, well, you'll be nearly as fluent as any native speaker. Once you learn even a few of these phrases a week, your understanding of speaking this language will explode exponentially. The trick is to learn the phrase so well that you only have to exert a small amount of effort upon completing them. Listed below are several of the most common phrases in the language. How many of them do you know? If you find there are some you're stumbling over, then you may want to study them more. How often do you? Plus verb. Can I help you? Plus verb or as a question by itself. It's too late for that. You could have. Plus a verb. If I were you, I would have. Add verb. It looks like. Plus a noun. It's time to. Plus a verb. What if? Plus a subject and verb. How was? Plus a noun. Let's say that. Plus subject and verb. I think I should, plus a verb. I'm sorry to, plus a verb. I was thinking about, plus a verb. I think I should, plus a verb. Thank you for, plus a verb. I don't know what to do about, plus a noun. Have you ever thought about, plus a verb. Using just one of those phrases, you're about to see how many different situations it's suited for. Have you ever thought about, plus a verb. Have you ever thought about starting your business? Have you ever thought about changing jobs? Have you ever thought about learning how to swim? Have you ever thought about becoming a writer? Have you ever thought about having more children? Have you ever thought about selling your house? Have you ever thought about visiting South America? Have you ever thought about learning Russian? Have you ever thought about the meaning of life? Have you ever thought about joining a fitness center? If you learned just this one phrase, you can immediately see how many ways you can use it in daily conversation. This phrase in particular is a great example, because when you ask it, you're inviting someone into a conversation with you. That will spawn the use of even more sentences using phrases you've already learned. Can you see how pointless it becomes to learn individual words when your ultimate aim is to speak more fluently? That's not to say that learning more words isn't important, but don't forget to give a priority to learning phrases as well. 3. Think in English. When you go to speak to someone, don't think in your native language and then translate the sentence into English. Simply think in English. This is one of those guidelines that is easier said than done. You're trying to break a habit, thinking in your native tongue, that has been with you all of your life. To be honest, you probably don't know any other way to think. Why is thinking in your native language not a particularly good idea? The ordering of the words in your native language is more than likely not going to be the same as in the English language. Your natural tendency will be to repeat the English words in that order. But more than that, in the process of translating your sentence, you'll probably be trying to use grammar rules you're not all that familiar with yet. Thinking in English will, undoubtedly, be difficult at first. But the more you force your mind to do it, the easier it becomes. And the easier it becomes, the more fluent you'll be at the English language. Give it a try the next time you go to speak English. 4. Practice speaking English when you hear it. Remember that reading and listening to the English word doesn't make you a better speaker. It will give you more knowledge of reading the written word and understanding it when it is spoken to you. But learning to speak it yourself requires you to do more work. It requires that you truly become interactive with the language. Without a doubt, reading and listening to the language are two of the most important aspects of learning English, but you're missing the final piece of the puzzle if you don't practice speaking it. This goes for any language, not just English. Think about the order in which young children learn their native language. They first learn how to speak it and become quite fluent in it, and finally learn how to read. Yes, I know that in the process they make many grammatical mistakes. One of the most common is to use the word brung as a past tense form of bring. The correct form is brought. Look what I've brung you. But the vital point is they didn't wait until they knew what the proper form of the verb was before they spoke, and they do indeed get their message across. So don't obsess with reading and listening. It appears the natural order of learning a language is listening, speaking, reading, and then writing. So don't think for a moment that your reading and writing skills aren't good enough to allow you to speak it. Your average 4-year-old doesn't seem to worry about it. 5. Surround yourself with others who speak English. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Immerse yourself in the English language. Compare the English language to an ocean. As long as you stay on the ship, you'll only learn what's at the surface of the ocean. Sure, you'll have a great view of the waves and you know the temperament by dipping your hands in the water occasionally, but you'll never know what lies beneath the surface unless you immerse yourself, submerge yourself into the body of water. If you don't take the plunge from the boat into the ocean right now, when will you? Think about this for a moment. Those English students who excel at speaking the language are usually the individuals who attended or are still attending an English-speaking school. Why is that? Because they were in a culture that forced them to speak English. If they had their way, they might have preferred to speak more in their own language. But they took all their classroom lessons in English, talked to their professors in English, even talked to their friends in English. Compare these individuals to those who studied abroad but returned lamenting they still aren't fluent in the language. Because all the while they were in an English-speaking country, they never allowed themselves to take the plunge. For whatever reason, they never took the plunge into fully using what skills they had developed up to that time. So does that mean you have to travel to or go to an English-speaking school in order to speak the language fluently? No, not by a long shot. you can become fluent in the language without ever traveling anywhere. Simply make a pact with your friends who are also learning the language that you're all going to dive into the ocean of English to learn what's beneath the surface. Promise each other then, when gathered, you'll only speak English. Don't have that many friends who are English speakers or learning the language? Before you know it, you'll find yourself thinking in English when you're around these individuals, and speaking in the language won't seem so frightening any longer. Chapter 4. Mistakes are the foundation of any good speaker. Would you like me to give you a formula for success? It's quite simple, really. Double your rate of failure. Thomas J. Watson, founder of IBM. Right about now, you may be thinking that this chapter is a thinly veiled attempt to make you believe that mistakes are good. They're our friends, in fact. You may also be thinking that I'm crazy. But it's true. Mistakes are your friends. I hate to tell you, but the sooner you recognize this, the faster you'll learn the English language. If you've ever heard any motivational speaker, then you've probably heard that you can only learn if you're willing to make mistakes. This statement is true regardless of what you're doing, learning a language, to building a multi-million dollar business. The speaker, of course, didn't mean that you should purposely set out to make mistakes. What he meant was when you find you've made a mistake, learn from it and continue on. It's the greatest advice you can be given, in fact, with regard to learning how to speak English. You can only be a fluent speaker if you actually speak it. When you do speak it, you're very likely to make mistakes. It's only natural. In a way, you could say if you're not making any mistakes, then you're really not learning much. You may think that's a harsh statement, but it happens to be the truth. When you hit that plateau of speaking English, then it's vital to break through to the next level as quickly as possible. And the only way to do that is to expose yourself to the possibility of making mistakes in your speech. For most of us, that means to step outside of your comfort zone. That's a scary proposition for most of us, but you know you have to do it. The following are a few tips of how to practice speaking more despite your fears. 1. Enter a low-risk situation. What's a low-risk situation? It's one that's friendly enough that when you do make mistakes, those around you understand and gently correct you. It's a situation in which you trust those with whom you're speaking to understand your learning. One of the best situations to put yourself into is to work with other students. You need to ask everyone in the conversation to correct you. Diplomatically, of course, when you misspeak or your grammar is horribly incorrect. You, in turn, are confronting your fear and leaving your comfort zone in a limited, controlled way. So what produces this fear anyway? It seems counterintuitive that you would fear speaking the very language you've been so enthusiastic about learning, but that's human nature. You're not alone in your fear. And if you understand the origin of your fear, then you'll be able to grapple with it better. Many psychologists will tell you that the fear of doing something, even learning a language, stems from your thinking that you must speak it perfectly. That is, without any mistakes. You need to ask yourself why you feel this way. What would happen if you did make a mistake in your conversation? The worst case scenario would be being laughed at, let's say. Your mistake may unintentionally offend someone, or it may mean that someone misunderstood what you said. There may be other reasons, though, you fear mistakes when speaking to others. Perhaps you have the long-held belief that making a mistake is a sign of weakness. The problem with this line of thinking, though, is that you have molded these thoughts to such gigantic proportions and distorted them so they're all you can see. Now you've created the mindset that you can't afford the luxury of making a mistake in your conversations. Does this scenario apply to you? If the perfectionist line of thinking is hindering your learning, you can change your thinking with 3 easy steps and start speaking English again. 1. First, you need to identify this type of thinking. This means you must give some thought to why you're hesitating about speaking English in public. Have you been laughed at in the past for mistakes you've made? Perhaps in making a mistake, you've inadvertently offended someone. Now you're afraid of offending any more individuals. If you can identify why you're fearful of speaking in public, then you can start to design a strategy to conquer it. 2. List other ways of thinking about this. Once you know the catalyst of your fears, then create a list of other ways of thinking about your English speaking with others. This could include such thoughts as, "Others understand that I'm still learning and will forgive my mistakes." The more I speak, the better I'll become and the fewer mistakes I'll make. I need to accept these mistakes myself and not only forgive myself for them, but learn from them as well. 3. Now, review this list of alternative thoughts. Compare it to your perfectionist thinking. Once you analyze both ways of thinking, see if you can't develop another perspective on the situation that will be helpful to your learning and give you a more realistic view of the situation. It may take some time to change your thinking, but you can if you follow these suggestions. You may even begin speaking a limited amount while you're reviewing your situation. I have a friend who's still learning English. He speaks it fairly well, but the one situation he hates to find himself in is ordering pizza over the phone. He's terrified he'll order the wrong toppings, and then he has a worthless pizza. So this is how he used these steps to reduce his fears about it. After he calmed down a bit from the thought, he identified his perfectionist thinking. The person taking my order will think I'm stupid. He then created alternative thoughts to counter that. I'm anything but stupid. I'm using a new language that's not my native tongue. I'm speaking English the best I can at this point. Speaking on the phone is a wonderful way to use my English skills. In fact, the more I take risks like this, the more natural my speaking skills will be. The more I speak the language, the better I'll be and the more confident I'll be. Then he evaluated the situation in a new light. I may be afraid of looking stupid, but I know differently. I'm learning a new language, and I'm giving it my best shot. I'm allowed to make mistakes. It is, after all, the only way I'll improve. And improve you will. The more often you step out of your comfort zone and push yourself to speak better English, you'll discover that your English is getting better and better. Why not try it yourself? What have you got to lose? Except your fear, that is. Are you ready to accelerate the learning process? Yes, I am talking about mistakes. Just like the above individual, you finally took the risk of ordering pizza in English. It's time you take that giant leap to not only accepting your mistakes, but embracing them. You've probably heard the story about Thomas Edison, probably the most prolific inventor of the 20th century. He was asked once how he felt during his failed attempts at finding the proper material for the filament of the light bulb. The individual specifically pointed out that Edison went through nearly 10,000 various materials before he discovered the proper one. Edison quickly corrected him with this unique perspective on the situation. I did not fail 9,999 times. I found 9,999 ways of how not to create a light bulb. As long as you view your mistakes as signs for not learning or reasons why you'll never learn to speak the language, you'll never go beyond the level of fluency you're at right now. The moment, however, you accept mistakes as not only a natural part of life, but a very necessary tool in the learning process, you'll unleash that hidden power of learning that lies within you. Now is the time to accept the power of mistakes and press on and expose yourself as often as possible to the English language. Do this not fearful of making mistakes, but vowing to embrace the mistakes and learning from them. This, more than any other piece of advice, will radically change your view of learning the English language. Here are a few tips to start you off. 1. Find a trusted partner to work with. You can spend all the time you want reading English, but the moment you do, you've expanded your world of learning. Grab a partner that's ideally at your level of fluency or better. The idea is to create an atmosphere for learning that embraces, even encourages, mistakes. If you're both at about the same level of development, then you'll discover that you'll be benefited from this partnership. When you're searching for your partner, don't fear from asking someone you know from the internet or a friend in another part of the country. You can always practice the language through the technology of Skype. You may also want to spend some time exploring the website sharedtalk.org. Here, you'll discover not only students of the English language, but native speakers as well. In addition to chat rooms, the site contains voice rooms where several individuals can go to comfortably practice the language. There's just one word of caution in this method. That's the fact that you must find a person who embraces the possibility of mistakes as you do. You both need to know that you have that freedom. 2. Refine and expand your learning. Once you've found your partner, then it's time to get down to business. You may believe that sitting and talking is an excellent exercise, but think a moment about taking the extra step. Expand and refine your learning by through several strategies. One of them is to purposefully ask your partner to pronounce a few of the vocabulary words you've been using. Then repeat the words after him or her. This works extremely well if your language partner is a native speaker. He'll know the nuances of the spoken word that someone who speaks English as a second language may not. Another trick to getting the most out of these sessions is to record them, with the permission of your language buddy, of course.